begin this morning, let's pray again. Let's pray. Words from Psalm 19. May the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Over the past 5 weeks, we've been thinking about Nehemiah and his godly wall building. And we've looked at Nehemiah 5 times. And each time we've looked at a different aspect of his project. And the good thing about having Cafe Church and having a head mic, I can walk around and I can pick on people and ask you questions. But I'm not going to pick on people yet. But can anyone remember some of the 5 things that we thought about over the last 5 weeks? What were the 5 key things that were involved in Nehemiah's ministry and his project? Anyone come up with the first thing?
Prayer.
The first thing he did, and this is important for everything we do as Christians, is to start with prayer. Okay, that's number one. Number two, what happened next? Everyone was out that Sunday, or were you dozing? Secondly, was vision. He had to have a vision. He had to see the need, see what needed to be done, and convey that vision to other people. But that still didn't build the walls. What was the third thing? What did he have to do next? The third thing. Gonna start picking on people, die. Teamwork, yes. The third thing was he had to motivate people to do the work. He couldn't do it himself. Oh, he could have probably piled a few stones on, but that wouldn't have built a wall. But what happened after that? There were some problems, and how did he deal with them? Number four, what was that? Anyone remember?
Perseverance.
It did involve perseverance, but it was about compassion. It was about the needs of the poor in the society. They were building the wall. They didn't have time to look after their land, so they needed help. So there was compassion for the poor. And lastly, Nigel shared with us last week, what did he share with us about when they finished building the wall, what did they turn to do? Listen to the word and worship. And so it is that doing things alone for God is not enough. We must listen to God's word and worship. One question I think that wasn't answered during the 5 weeks was, why on earth did he build a wall? What was the point of it all? I mean, people don't suddenly just go and start building walls. Well, perhaps if you're Trump, you might do that. But most of us don't go around building walls. Why did Nehemiah build a wall? What was the point? What was the purpose of it? Any ideas? I'll give you a clue. Why do you have a front door?
Keep
the enemies out. Also, Dia lives in a very hostile area, so her front door is to keep the enemies out. Okay, but so it's about protection, it's about security, but it's actually more than that. The wall is a sort of boundary. It identifies what is the city and what is not. And it's also, it's a boundary, it sets limits, it means it's possible to control. So later on in Nehemiah, we discovered that Nehemiah wasn't happy about them trading on the Sabbath day. So he used the walls, or rather the doors, he shut the doors on the Sabbath, so the traders couldn't come in and out into the city. So it was used for control as well. So on the whole, the wall in Jerusalem was a good thing. It gave them safety, it gave them security, it gave them identity. And what I want to do this morning is think not just about walls, but think about walls as a kind of boundary. And we're going to think about boundaries because there are boundaries in every aspect of our life. And boundaries are not just the walls that surround us, the physical walls, the front door of our house, but they're boundaries which affect our actions and our behavior, affect our ethics and our morals, those kind of boundaries. And we've seen boundaries in the news a lot over the past year or so. So you have Theresa May with her red lines. These are boundaries that she will not cross in the Brexit negotiation. Or you may have personal boundaries. I don't know, and I'm not going to ask you to raise hands, but maybe some of you here are vegetarians. And that means you have a personal boundary. You won't eat meat unless you're tricked into doing so. So it's a boundary. This week, the Americans in particular celebrated a crossing of a particular boundary. What do we remember? The 50th anniversary this week. Going to the moon. Now, a great fuss about it, and they're saying there were 600 million people watching it 50 years ago on TV. Maybe. I wasn't one of them. It wasn't such a big sensation. I listened to the news later on, but it wasn't such a big deal. But that was a crossing of a boundary, a seemingly impossible boundary, getting out into space and getting to the moon. And you know, in the Bible, it also talks about boundaries. Right in the first chapter of Genesis, there are various boundaries. One of the first boundaries is the boundary between light and darkness. Then there's the boundary between the land and the sky or the heavens. Then there are boundaries between the waters and the land. So there were physical boundaries in Genesis. But later on, as you read a bit further in Genesis, God also set other boundaries, very simple boundaries. He told Adam and Eve, and particularly Adam, he gave the responsibility to do things and not to do certain things. And so we read in Genesis 2, verse 16, and the Lord God commanded the man, you are free to eat of any tree in the garden. That is a carte blanche. Anything, it's all yours. Wow, tremendous. But, there's a but. And the buts in the Bible are always significant. But, you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good or evil, for when you eat of it, you will surely die. That was a boundary that God set for Adam. That was a test for Adam and for Eve. And sadly, he failed the boundary. Now, boundaries are something not just in the Bible, not just for politicians, boundaries are for us. And so we have boundaries at home, at the workplace, in our community. So who's going to be brave and tell me what are the boundaries at home? Do you have any boundaries at home? Are there any things that you're not supposed to do or supposed to do? Can you think of any? Wow, that's a great place, no boundaries. What about you? Have you got any boundaries in your home? Any things you're not supposed to do or you should do? No boundaries. Wow, these are amazing children. They don't have boundaries. But when I was a boy, there were boundaries. You don't leave your socks and your underpants scattered around your bedroom. You put them in the linen basket. You have jobs to do. You don't stay up till midnight watching your favorite program on TV. You go to bed at a certain time. There were boundaries. And it's not just in home that they're and it's not just children. Husbands, you don't leave all your dirty cups and mugs around the place. And there are things to do, like putting out the garbage and so on. There are boundaries. And also in the workplace, aren't there? There are boundaries in the workplace. Who can think of Alan, what things, what boundaries are there in the workplace? What mustn't you do or must do?
Leave the forklift in the wrong place.
Leave the forklift. Well, probably not many of us have that boundary, but there'll be other boundaries, like, what other boundaries? Turn up on time, yeah, and if you keep being late, you may get a warning letter. there are boundaries. And we have boundaries in the community. I wonder sometimes in Monmouth Court whether we break some of the boundaries by having lots of people and noisy parties and things like that, and our neighbour looking over the fence wondering about us. But there are boundaries. And certainly if you throw your rubbish over the neighbour's fence, that's breaking a boundary. And in the nation, we also have boundaries. Lots of different boundaries. But one of them is about hate speech. You're not allowed to say nasty things publicly about other people that instills hatred. But are boundaries on the whole a good thing? Who thinks boundaries are a good thing? Please raise your hand if you think boundaries. Wow. You all think boundaries are good. Wow, that's amazing. But, you know, they're not always a good thing. Speak to any three-year-old who's got sweets and got her friends round, and she'll probably say, they're mine. I don't want to share. They're mine. That's a boundary that she can set. They're her sweets. Why should she share them with someone else? And we try and convince them that it's good to share. But it's not just children. It's adults too. It's the rich. It's the people who own things. If you've got a nice house and a valuable house, you don't like it if scruffy people turn up next door and lower the tone of the neighbourhood. Or maybe if you're British and you're concerned about jobs, you voted for Brexit because you didn't like the thought of all these people coming into our country and taking our jobs and buying our houses and all that kind of thing. We set boundaries, and they're not always a good thing. Just recently, I was reading in the news about in Lambeth, in London, a housing developer had to, because of planning, had to build, have certain amount of houses that he could sell, and certain amount of houses which were for social housing. And what did he do? In order to make the houses that he wanted to sell more saleable, he segregated the play areas. So the children from the social housing couldn't play in the nice play area for the people who were going to buy their house. So that was a boundary. And it's been overruled. He's not allowed to do that anymore. But that's the kind of boundaries that people sometimes set wrong boundaries. But on the whole, and I think you were right, the majority of you, or nearly all of you, that boundaries are a good thing. And I'll just cite one example, the Highway Code. The Highway Code, those of you who are studying to pass your driving test will be learning up, mugging up about the Highway Code. But it's not just for passing a test. The Highway Code is for safe driving. It's for protecting other drivers. It's for protecting children. And you've only got to look at the statistics. I went online last night. Malaysia, where I used to drive, most people didn't wear seat belts, didn't wear helmets, and often didn't observe the Highway Code. And the death rate on the roads is 10 times what it is in Britain. But if you think that bad, don't go to Zimbabwe, because Zimbabwe is at the top of road traffic accidents, and their rate of death is 30 times that in Britain. So boundaries, and where people observe boundaries, are usually a good thing. But one of the difficulties is who sets the rules? Who sets the boundaries? This is the problem area, isn't it? And this was the problem area, I think, for Brexit. One of the slogans, the strap lines for Brexit was, take back control. We want to set the boundaries. We don't want the European authority to set the boundaries. But just a moment, what were some of the boundaries that the Europeans set for us? They set boundaries that give us clean beaches. They set boundaries that protected us from car emissions. They set boundaries that provided environmental standards, which we had to follow as a nation. So it wasn't all necessarily bad. And when you look at who sets boundaries, it's actually quite complicated. There are, as it were, two different kinds of boundaries. There are boundaries which we could call legal boundaries, where there is enforcement. So if you don't follow the boundary, you will be in trouble. You may get put in prison, and so on. But there are other boundaries which are informal, which are by consensus. And if you don't follow them, there's no penalty. So, for example, if we think of the hierarchy, that's the biggest person setting boundaries down to the lowest. At the top, we would have international boundaries, like war crimes. So the UN has a war crimes commission. So if you commit a war crime in Britain and slaughter people, you can be had up by the international commission. And you can't appeal to British law or European law to save you, because they're right at the top. And then, of course, being in Europe still, we come under the European authority, and we can appeal, if we don't like what the British court says, to the European Court of Justice. And then, after Europe, comes our own parliament and our legal system. After, below that, comes our local authorities. Our local authorities also set boundaries. They set boundaries about what you have to pay them. They set boundaries about the services they provide, and so on. And then there are schools. Schools have boundaries, don't they? They have boundaries. I think they do. Think at school you have rules, things you can't do. And I suspect one of the rules that you're not allowed to do is to bully other boys and girls. That's a boundary, something that's forbidden. And then, of course, the workplace has boundaries. So they're the sort of formal boundaries. But the informal ones, the consensus, are, for example, cultural. There are cultural boundaries. And if you live in different cultures, they have different norms. So in many countries in Asia, for example, they have arranged marriages. The parents and probably relatives, aunts and uncles, will get together and arrange a suitable husband or wife for their sons and daughters. In Britain, our culture, that would be quite unusual. We think about love marriages, so-called. But you know, when you actually look at arranged marriages and love marriages, I think arranged marriages actually work just as well, if not sometimes better, than love marriages, because parents sometimes have wisdom. Of course, I'm not talking about forced marriages. I'm not talking about where someone's married off against their will. But it's not just culture. Our community sets standards. What is expected in the community? So drunkenness on the street is not acceptable in our community, although it may happen sometimes. There's also what we call peer group pressure. That's the pressure of the people you mix with. So at school, it's what your friends do and what your friends think. And I suspect that one of the reasons for all the knife crime is because boys in particular like to be like their peers, like their friends. And if their friend carry a knife, they will carry a knife as well. And then there are what we call the influencers. Influencers. So if you're into social media and Twitter and so on, there are people who make statements, sometimes good statements, sometimes bad statements, or pictures of how they dress or the food they eat. And this influences. These form boundaries. And then you have good influences and bad influences. But what's the Bible view? The Bible view is very simple. And the Bible view of boundaries is simply this. First of all, the big boundary setter is God himself. That God knows what is best for us, and he sets guidelines and boundaries. But God also, as it were, gives the job to other people. And number one on God's list is not governments, actually, it's parents. And so in the Bible, in the Ten Commandments, the fifth commandment is about honoring your father and your mother, because they're given the position of authority to set boundaries for their children while they're growing up in the family. And then other delegated authorities, that God gives authority to the faith leaders, Moses and others for the Jewish people, the priests. He gives authority in the New Testament times to the spiritual leaders in the church. But he also gives authority to rulers and governments. We find this in Romans. Paul writes this: "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except what God has established." So God has given authority to governments, to kings, to rulers, to presidents, and so on, to rule wisely. Now we know, even from the Bible, let alone today, a lot of the people in authority don't make a good job of it. But we're still called to submit to boundaries. But note, the set boundaries may not be fair. They may not be right. And there may be times when we have to protest against them, or even, rather rarely, but sometimes, to disobey them. Classical example of this is in the Bible. In the book of Daniel, we find three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they refuse to worship this monster golden statue, 90 foot higher than the guild hall. And they refused to bow down and worship it. They wouldn't do it. Even though the king said, "You must do it," they said, "We will not do it." Why? Because of divine authority that overruled what the king said. Divine authority said, "You only worship God." Similarly, in New Testament times, many Christians disobeyed the order of the emperor, of Caesar, because they wouldn't worship him as God, and they paid the penalty. And sometimes we do need to disobey those rules that contradict God. But how do people actually set boundaries? What's their basis for boundary setting? I think the most important influence is your understanding of who we are as people. If your understanding of who men and women are is simply, well, basically, we're just some kind of animal with a big brain which makes us superior to other animals, but we're not really any different from them. If that's your view, then it will guide the kind of boundaries that you set. And for example, if that's your view, we're not really much different to animals, then if you put your animals to sleep when they get old and inconvenient to look after them, wouldn't you do the same for people? Wouldn't you introduce euthanasia? And that's essentially what Hitler and his team tried to do. They disposed of people because they thought they're just trash, they're not important. But you see, that's not the Bible view. The Bible viewpoint is that, yes, we're part of the animal kingdom, but we're different. And so in Genesis 1:27, it says, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." The Bible doesn't deny that we're part of the animal kingdom, but it does say that we are special. We are made in the image of God. Now, no one quite knows what that means, but what we do know is it means that men and women, every man, woman, and child has dignity, is special, is valuable, because we bear God's image. And the Bible makes it clear that part of bearing God's image is that we're more than just an animal. We have a spirit, we have a soul, we have that part of us that can know God, that can listen to God, that can worship God. Each one of us is special in God's eyes. I remember in the 60s having to drive from Manchester across the Pennines at night in the winter. And it was dark, but worse than that, it was really foggy. And the way the route I chose was going across Snake Pass. Some of you may know it. And Snake Pass is a very winding road that goes up and then over the top of the Pennines and back down the other side. And to begin with, it was going okay. I was driving fairly carefully. And one of the good things when it's foggy is something called cat's eyes. And the cat's eyes, I could see as I drove along, the cat's eyes blinking in the headlights. And I carefully kept on the left-hand side of the cat's eyes. But suddenly, and I don't know what had happened, maybe they were doing road repairs or something, they had removed the cat's eyes. There was no white line, there was no cat's eyes. There was just a yawning, misty darkness. And so I drove even slower. But about 2 or 3 minutes later, to my shock, I saw the cat's eyes again. And they were on the other side. I was on the wrong side of the cat's eyes. And I was terrified. You see, that's what happens when boundaries get blurred. And the problem in society today is that many of the boundaries are blurred. So take parenting, for example. One of the influences from America is that one of the things that the modern family, they don't call mum and dad. It's Bob and Diane. So as soon as you start using that kind of language, you are blurring a boundary, that there is a difference in authority and role and responsibility. It's not just about rights, it's about responsibilities. There are different rights, roles and responsibilities for parents. And we have to be careful not to blur the boundaries. Or take another much more controversial area of gender identity. Over the past 20, 30 years or so, boundaries have been blurred. And one of the ways it's been blurred is by hairstyles and by dress and so on. It's not a question of equality, it's a question of differentiation. And one of the very interesting things in the Bible, you'll see, particularly in the Old Testament, they were very hot on distinction of identity. This is a boy, this is a girl. And it was shown by dress, what they wore. And even in the New Testament, you get this idea of women being distinguished with long hair and so on. And sometimes when we begin to blur identity, we can let ourselves into all sorts of difficulty. But more than that, not just identity, sexual relationships. And this is a big area where the boundaries have been blurred. And they've been blurred by legal work, by changing the definition of what marriage is, by making marriage easier and easier to get out of through divorce. It's also being blurred by all that we hear in the stories, in the media, in the TV, which portray actually marriage doesn't really make any sense. Let's all just do what we like. We're just animals after all. So let's express ourselves and not worry about things. But you see, the boundary of marriage is there for a purpose. It's for safety, security, particularly for the family and for the children. If you break that boundary, then lots of people get hurt. Just a few weeks ago, I was driving down to Plymouth in my Citroen, and like all modern cars, it got so many warning lights on the dashboard. Have you ever counted how many warning lights there are on your dashboard? It must be about 10 or 12 on the Citroen one. And I was driving happily along, And then suddenly a new light started flashing that I'd never seen before. But I guess, I can't remember exactly what the symbol was, but I guess it had something to do with tires, because it sort of showed a tire with sort of daggers coming from it. So I thought, uh-oh, I've got to punch it. So as soon as it was, I was able, I slowed down and I stopped and in the lay-by, and I walked around the car, and all the tires seemed fine. So I got back in, started the engine, the warning light was still there. When I got to somewhere safe, I got out the handbook to find out what this warning light really meant. And as I read in this handbook, unfortunately it wasn't in French, I discovered that the warning light was if the tire pressures were not balanced. So if one tire pressure on one side was 2 or 3 pounds more on the other side. And I'd recently had the tires changed, and obviously in the garage they hadn't balanced the tire pressure. So that was fine. I went home, I readjusted the tire pressures, but the light stayed on. So I had to go back into the manual. How do you turn the warning light off? And then I discovered that under the dashboard in the secret place, there's a little button that if you press, it will reset the light. So I had to go back to the manufacturer's instructions in order to sort the problem. And basically the reading that we had from Psalm 19, and I do hope you'll go back perhaps and read Psalm 19 afresh, it's a great psalm, tells us this, that God is our creator. He's, as it were, our maker. And he has set the instructions for our lives and our running. And if you want to do well in your life, and I'm not talking about becoming rich or famous, I'm talking about having shalom, having a happy, contented, joyful life, then you will follow the manufacturer's instructions. Just 2 weeks ago, I was sitting on the front row and someone had got a jacket across the front chair. And as I looked at the jacket, I noticed there was a label in the jacket identifying the manufacturer. And the label said one word, and I've since seen it on some of my own garments. It said, trespass. Trespass. And I thought, that's a strange name to advertise a garment, trespass. But you know, it fits in. It's probably a very cunning word to use, because it fits in to the modern sense of rebellion, of crossing into forbidden territory, of doing things that are a bit naughty that we shouldn't quite do, trespass. But you see, in the Bible, it tells us, beware when you trespass across forbidden boundaries. And in the Lord's Prayer, the old version, we ask about, forgive us our trespasses. It's not something good to trespass. On Wednesday, Rona was at the coffee morning, and so it was my job to look after Ellie. And on the whole, Ellie, she's 3 years old, and she's a delight to look after. But she does have her moments, and she is a very independent madam. And she'd been to the toilet, and in going to the toilet, she'd taken all her clothes off, every single stitch of clothes. And she came back into the lounge, and I said, Ellie, go put some clothes on. And she said, no. And so we had this sort of confrontation for a little while. But that was a boundary I had set. I don't have naked three-year-olds running around my house. You wear clothes. And then she said, I want to watch TV. I said, no, no TV, you wear clothes. And so she went off in a huff. And about 10 minutes later, I was sitting at the dining room table. And normally when she goes off, I sort of listen. And there didn't seem to be any smashing or crashing or anything dangerous, so I just left her. And then 10 minutes later, she came back in, and she came up to me, and she was fully dressed. And she said to me, I'm happy now. And she gave me a hug. And you know, that's exactly how it is. When we trespass, when we cross God's boundaries, we'll not be happy. And it's only when we come back to God, as it were, fully dressed, following his boundaries, that we will know that joy and happiness that he intends for us. God bless.